I believe that if you lay down a solid and a strong foundation for your business in the very early days, you will set up yourself for success in the long run. If you go on to chase growth hack after growth hack and buy into all the systems and frameworks that are mostly peddled by the hustle bros online, then you might see some growth, but it won't be for long.
Welcome to the Standout Business Show, where it's all about making a bigger difference by doing business differently. I'm Brad Powell, and today we're looking at what future-proofing means for your business in 2023. Here's my first question. Are you ready for success and exponential growth this year? Because here's the thing. Our minds are mostly trained to guard against failure. And after all, like 70% of startups are going to fail in the first 2 to 5 years. So we need to be thinking about this idea of future-proofing. If we're going to make it to that group, small group of businesses that survive, or not just survive, but thrive this year and next year and year after, how would your business change if all of a sudden you were to triple your revenue? I mean, if you had like 50 of your dream clients come in next week, would that be great? Or would it be a headache? Would you be ready for it? And while I'll bet you have a lot of plans for failure, I'll bet you $5 you don't have a plan for radical success. So I think it's more important than ever right now for us to be thinking about how we can imagine the sustainable and successful future for our work. And to help us do that, I've invited digital marketer and trend analyst Adriana Tika onto the show. And I want you to stay tuned because she's going to walk us through how you can build a solid foundation for long-term sustainable growth and future-proof your business. So with that, let's start the show. All right, Adriana, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brad, happy to be here.
All right, well, to start us off, I got a lot of the idea for this particular episode by looking at your blog and reading one blog post in particular where you were sharing a story about how you had your business and it was getting 70% growth year after year, and that almost killed it, which is kind of counterintuitive in most people's minds. Like, 70%, that sounds great. You know, what happened? So tell us that story.
Yeah. So what happened was that I opened up an agency back in 2015. And just like everyone else who opens a new business, I was very, very focused on growth. I wanted more clients. I wanted to charge them more. So eventually I needed to hire more people. And I mean, you know how this circle goes. It can be a virtuous circle or it can be a vicious circle. For me, it was a vicious circle because I did not discriminate. If someone wanted to be a client of ours, I was, yeah, sure, come on board. To do that, I hired more people, and guess what? None of these people, neither the clients nor the new writers I had hired, none of them were a good fit. We ended up onboarding the wrong type of clients. We were doing a lot of content marketing and copywriting back then. And we were very, very close to turning the agency into a content mill. And at some point, I figured out that I was way far from my initial tagline that was boutique approach, grand results. We no longer had boutique approach. We were just onboarding people with a couple of emails. We barely offered any personalized onboarding. So I figured that out. I fired nearly half my team. I also fired a lot of clients. We took a massive revenue hit in our second quarter, I guess, but then we were back on track by the end of the year, and we managed to stay true to our value proposal again. So for me, fast, rapid growth nearly meant the death of my business, and it was all because I wasn't careful enough to build a solid foundation before I started promoting my business and before I started taking on clients. And I see this type of thing happen regularly with all types of businesses, and more recently with creators.
Yeah, well, the thing that stuck out to me in what you just were talking about there is all around working with the right people. And this works both for the clientele that you are saying yes to, as well as the team that you bring on and sort of who they are. So can you unpack that a little bit? You can start on either side of those fences, whether it's with your clients or with your own people. But how did you and how do you now approach that recruitment in terms of whether, you know, how do you decide who you're going to work with in terms of clientele, and also who you're going to work with in terms of the people who are on your team?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's choosing how to work with either clients or people who work for you. There's something both of these things have in common. You have to make sure they're the right fit, because if they are not, they're going to make you miserable. I know very few people talk about this, about whether you're happy in your business or you just go through the motions because you need to pay the bills and keep the lights on. And that's a perfectly valid reason to have a business. But if you're only going through the motions, and if financial gains are your only motivation, you're going to end up being miserable very, very soon. It happened to me, and it showed in my business too. So this is not a recipe for long-term success. What I did after my initial mistake was that I paid more attention, first and foremost, to the clients I was working on. I started sending them detailed brief. I started asking what they needed out of us. I never signed year-long contracts before asking them to do a test run. This works well in more ways than one. First of all, it helps them build trust, because they don't have to lay down a huge sum of money in the beginning, and they get to test our services. But at the other end, we also get to test how we get along with them and whether we have good communication and whether their values are aligned to ours. So this new approach allowed me to stop working with clients that were a bad fit. And consequently, I could also stop hiring people who are a bad fit for my company culture. Don't get me wrong, it's a very small business. It was a small business back then. I was never working with hundreds of clients or hundreds of writers. But even so, even one bad apple can spoil all of them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've got one comment from Natalie. She says, I love your candidness. We can all get sidetracked and forget why we're in business sometimes. Absolutely.
Yeah, I was very rich back then, you know. I mean, very rich for my standards and for my expectations. My business took off so fast that it literally left me behind, you know. But I soon realized that I couldn't keep it up at that pace. I mean, money be damned, but no, it wasn't the kind of life I wanted to build, nor the kind of business. There were tons of those already, and I didn't want to be one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it reminds me, there's a woman by the name of Pia Silva who not only has an agency, but she helps other small agencies do their marketing. And one of her approaches is similar to what you were talking about in terms of like not the long year-long contract, but she actually works when she brings on a client, and this is what she teaches. She does something that she calls a lead product, which is this initial very small engagement. And it's all about building their relationship and building the trust to go through this first relatively small round. And then you both know whether or not it's good to be working together. And in the best case scenario, this new client that you're bringing on now sees what it's like to work with you, and you know, they really like, if they like you and they like how you work, then they're really ready to buy into whatever the much higher ticket and longer term contract might be. Whereas if you do it the other way around, where you're going, hey, look, here's this long thing and high price and whatever, that potential client is going to look at that in a very different way and go, well, I don't know, like I have to go talk to three or four other people before I can say yes to this. Yeah. So it's a really interesting relationship building method, which I think is much more likely to build a successful relationship in terms of how the two of you can function and make whatever project you're working on be successful.
Absolutely. It's a proof of concept of sorts. And it's the approach that helps us keep clients for 7 years or more. I mean, we still have clients that have been with me since I was a freelancer, and then they moved on to my agency business and so on. This is something that I'm very proud of, and I can't believe I almost lost it, you know. One of the reasons why I started my newsletter, I believe that if you lay down a solid and a strong foundation for your business in the very early days, you will set up yourself for success in the long run. If you go on to chase growth hack after growth hack and buy into all the systems and frameworks that are mostly peddled by the hustle bros online, then you might see some growth, but it won't be for long.
Yeah, one of the guests I had on just a couple of weeks ago is Michelle Warner, and she was talking about her whole thing is relationship marketing. And so it's really turning all your ideas about how do you want to market yourself into this intention of, well, I'm really just wanting to build a good relationship with the people who I want to work with. And if you have that as your sort of everything you do is oriented around that.
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
Let's move to the other side of the fence and talk about team building. And so you want to apply some of these same principles to when you're bringing people on to work with you within your own organization. And so how have you improved and maintained your approach there?
Right. So in the beginning, when we were growing so rapidly, I simply had to hire people and I had to do it fast. I needed them to start yesterday. And so I couldn't get them to go through all the tests and all the steps. And so I ended up, of course, onboarding a lot of the wrong people. They ended up leaving me in the middle of a project. It was a hot mess. Everything was a hot mess. I spent many a night working on projects that should have been tackled by my writers. So what I did when I restructured everything was that I created my own hiring process that started with a couple of small written tests, a Zoom call way before Zooms were cool. And then because I had the time to do that, I would get them started by working on something for our own brand. They wouldn't start by working directly for our customers. So this gave me time to assess their abilities better and to make sure they are able to meet deadlines, because we had built a reputation where we never, ever missed a deadline. And so for me, this was very, very important, you know, to make sure that my team delivered on time and that we had enough time to edit everything, to go through all the rounds of changes if needed, and so on and so forth. So my hiring process became longer, but it also became more future-proof, which is what I was aiming for.
Yeah, well, it, you know, a lot of the similar mentality and idea applies equally well with team members. One of the things that I feel like I've had success with in terms of people that I've managed is around creating autonomy for them so that, and also being like the vision, not just creator, but carrier, you know, like there's even in a very small group, like if you're only working with three people and you can have a vision and a culture around, well, what does it mean? Like, what are we really after? Like, what's the legendary quest that we're on? And if you can get people to see that and buy into it, and not only that, but contribute to it, like actually expand upon that particular dream, then they're feeling like, oh, I'm a part of this really good work that we all get to do. And when people are working from that kind of inner motivation, it makes all the difference in terms of, you know, how you work together and what they're willing to do and, you know, and how they're actually willing to show up for the clients that are now have hired you.
Absolutely. And I love that you mentioned allowing your team members to contribute to your vision. It doesn't have to be set in stone. And I think it's absolutely essential that it's very fluid and flexible because, you know, contexts change, economies change, your company changes. You can't have your vision or your mission be something that's set in stone from the very beginning that never changes or grows along with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, I feel it's inclusive around your team. It's also inclusive around your clients and your audience. You know, like even people who are reading your newsletter, people are watching the live stream. They can all be contributors to where are we going? Like what's happening with this thing that we're creating together? And what is the, like in this case, we're having this conversation about helping businesses be more sustainable and be more resilient. And I think, you know, everybody has the post-pandemic malaise of, oh my God, what just happened to us?
Yeah.
And we're still recovering, like that, you know, mentally and physically and a whole bunch of ways. So there's all kinds of things that we're still dealing with on a regular basis. And the new normal is so undefined that, you know, this conversation, the conversation like, well, how can us small business people figure out a path forward where we will be resilient and we can, you know, be sustainable almost no matter what comes our way? These are the kinds of conversations that I think are terrific right now that everyone can contribute to.
Yeah, absolutely. And the post-pandemic economic uncertainty doesn't help either. You know, it's thrown a lot of business owners into anxiety. Whatever they did during the pandemic, some businesses thrived, others struggled, others shut down completely. But even those who thrived during the pandemic, most of them thrived because people were glued to their screens for the better part of the day. This changed right now. I mean, the borders are open, the pubs are open, and you really can't compete with exotic travels and unlimited pints at your favorite pub. So if you have an online business that thrived during the pandemic, you're going to have to reinvent it right now to find other things that people need. People don't have the same buying patterns they used to back then. And oftentimes it's a tough pivot. I mean, the pivot during the pandemic was tough in itself. But this one that got us into a comfy bubble that had us spend most of our time online, I anticipate this one's going to be even tougher to break out of, you know?
Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, we all went through this transition where, oh, we have to talk on Zoom. Oh, like I can't go anywhere. So the only way I can communicate is through this little tiny, you know, square on my screen. And a lot of people adapted to that, and some had trouble adapting. But now it's like the opposite. You know, now it's like, oh, I'm really rusty about going out into the real world. and how, you know, what do I want, you know, what am I going to do now in terms of this reverse pivot into, you know, something entirely new? And again, as I say, like the new normal has just not been defined. It's something new and different.
Absolutely. And the fact that we struggle to call it normal doesn't make it any more normal than it is, you know? Yeah.
Right, exactly. All right. Well, one of the things that you have foundationally, and a lot of people are aware with this, is creating systems in your business so that you've got this almost kind of machine that can work and be repeatable, and it's, you're not reinventing the wheel every time you take on a new client and so forth. So could you talk a little bit about that process of systematizing different operations, and that even like the smallest operator really needs to be thinking about this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think in the very beginning, in the first days of your business, you don't even have to think systems. I mean, sure, keep them somewhere in the back of your mind, but in the beginning, try to do the things that don't scale. Talk to each of your clients, talk to each of your subscribers, to as many of your audience members as possible. Do this manually, if you will, you know. Don't try to automate anything. Don't try to systemize anything. Because doing the things that don't scale in the early days will give you a lot of insight into what you can and cannot systemize, into what you can and cannot automate. So what I have still kept in my agency, for instance, I still talk to all of our clients myself. Yes, I have briefs that are templatized and that I can send to everyone, but I wanted to retain this perk of talking to each of our clients myself. I'm the interface of the agency. Everything goes through me. This allows me to tailor my services, to tailor my offers according to what I learn from each client. And I've brought this mentality into my second business. I talk to as many of my subscribers as possible. I keep asking them, how did you feel about this issue? Did you like it? Do you like this approach? Did you like the other one? These are things that I don't plan to systemize anytime soon or to automate. But of course, I automate a lot of the other things. I have tiny snippets that I can add to each email I send. I don't have to write them from scratch every time. I use social media managing tools so I can post across networks at the same time. I don't need to log in and out of every platform every time I want to post something or any time I want to manage the comments that appear on my post. I think that after you've been in business for 3 to 6 months, yes, you can think about systemizing things. You can think about automating some of the things that you do every day, perhaps even delegating. But it's important to do the things that don't scale in the very beginning.
Let's do a little planning for success. I mean, you never know. Success could come any day now. And I'll use myself as an example. Like this past year, I've introduced a new service, which I call Mic Drop Moments, which is all about short form video. And basically what happens is that a client will come and work with me we do interviews remotely, and I interview them for just an hour. And in that hour, I'll ask them questions, they'll give me their answers, and I'll pull out some of their very best insights. And I'll take that footage from the recording and I'll edit it down into short social media friendly videos that will then get scheduled and posted all across every social media channel that they care to be on. And so for the time challenged entrepreneur, this works well because they only have to spend a single hour of their time and they get a month of social media content basically done for them, where they get to be the face of their brand, you know, on a daily basis, all over the place, you know, wherever they feel like their best audience is. And of course, this kind of medium is working really well right now because all of the platforms are feeling challenged and threatened by TikTok, which means that they're like, well, we need to do short form video too, and we need to make it even better. And if people are doing it, we need to encourage them to come onto our platform and do this kind of video making. So that if you do it on YouTube or Instagram or Facebook, and even on LinkedIn, the algorithm is going to say, great, we want more people to see this type of content. So it happens to perform very, very well. And this is a long way of saying that in the last little while, my business has seen a growth spurt. And so it's like, oh no, more people are coming to me and we have a lot of work and I have to hire new people and I need help and I need to systematize stuff. So what can you say to someone who's in this position where they're going, wow, things are growing, awesome. And then like, okay, but I need to be careful because too much success might derail everything.
Well, first of all, I'd congratulate them, you know, because when your business starts growing, if you're not completely overwhelmed with the work you have to do, you should always, and I mean always, take a bit of time to celebrate, to give yourself a hand, you know, you've made it. You've gotten where you wanted to be. Second of all, I'd start thinking about how this growth can be replicated in the future. Hiring the right people and making sure they're the right fit for your organization is, of course, the first step. Like you mentioned that you're hiring people right now. But you also said that you're riding this trend where short-form video is the darling of every algorithm out there. So what I would do if I were in your shoes, I would think, I have all these happy clients right now. What else can I offer them in the future, in the near future, or in the medium future? What else can I offer them to help them systematize their work even more, or to help them grow an even better presence on social media or outside of it? Is there any other service that they might need except for the mic drop videos? While I'm certain that this trend is going to be with us for a while, it's short form videos aren't going anywhere. Perhaps there's something else that they could use. Since you're already interviewing them, I'm sure you have some insights into their business and into what they do and into what they struggle with. And perhaps you can partner with someone else who does something other than video. Perhaps they do written content and you can offer them a turnkey package or something like that.
Yeah, that's all really great advice. And in fact, right to that point, one of the things that I'm doing right now is that I know that this sweet spot with the algorithm, like all things will only last so long and then it'll disappear. And it's like, okay, well, what else can we do with this kind of content? And so one of the things that I'm experimenting with is something that I call the short form sales letter. So that instead of landing on a landing page and getting this long, boring video that is just a bunch of slides and doesn't even show your face and goes on, like has no controls of whether you can play it or stop it or speed it up or any of that stuff. Like, it's just like, oh my gosh, how long do I have to sit here kind of experience? That instead of that, you create a set, like a really small set of maybe 4 1-minute videos that each one brings in one element and or handles one objection or does all the things that you want to do in the sales journey. And each one has a cliffhanger so that they're bingeable. And so that the person coming there will like watch video number one and go, oh, well, I have to go to the video number two. That ended like super quick. So it's sort of interactive. It's even choose your own adventure. Like they could start with video number three if they wanted to. And so I'm just sort of looking at this and experimenting with it. And it's a really fun creative project, but it's answering the question like, well, what else can we do creatively with short form video that's not just simply posting on social media?
Oh, I love this idea. It's what video sales letters should be in 2023.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one has the time to listen to half an hour of you pitching your own service. Yeah. Really. I mean, right. It's excruciating.
Right. Yeah. No, it's painful. And it's painful, especially because most of those sales letters or webinars or whatever, they all have the same format where the person gets on and they go, oh, you know, I used to sleep on my parents' couch and I had no money and I didn't know what I was going to do. And then all of a sudden I had this thing and I made $1 million. And now that I made $1 million, like, I'm going to show you how to make $1 million. And only the trouble is that doesn't take 30 seconds. That story lasts like half the webinar.
Absolutely. It's actually what I wrote today in my newsletter, where I was suggesting people could try doing webinars or workshops for free to help get more leads, you know. But I also warned them against making half the webinar a pitch. This is painful. This is not a webinar anymore, you know. It's an infomercial. This is what they feel like. So yeah, please don't do that. If you host your own webinar or your own workshop, even if it's free, even if it's paid, make sure that you pitch your higher ticket offer for no more than 10% of the duration of the webinar. It's enough. They get it. They'll get it in 3 minutes or less. Trust me.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Okay. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time here today. And so if there's one thing that you would like to bring on as a way to close this up in terms of the world of future-proofing, what would that be?
I would advise anyone who's starting their business today to go back to the basics of marketing before they move on to the hacks. Before they figure out how to be the kings of LinkedIn or the kings of Twitter, they should lay down their marketing principles, their foundation. Even start at Kotler, if you must, Philip Kotler, the guy who spoke about the 4 P's of marketing, product, price, promotion, and placement. These are still the basis of any healthy marketing strategy. Get those done first. Make sure you have a solid mission. Make sure you understand what people need. Make sure you sell something people actually need. Make sure you're not a solution looking for a problem. And then you can move on to figuring out which hacks are going to spark your growth and make you a billionaire within 3 months or less.
Right. We could all become billionaires. Who knows? You know, it could happen.
Absolutely. That framework and I'll teach you how.
Right. Right. All right. Well, if somebody's going, okay, well, I want to know that, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
So they can find me on adrianatica.com. My newsletter is called Ideas to Power Your Future. Of course, I encourage you to subscribe. You'll find an email from me every Thursday. And I promise there's no growth hacks inside, only solid, sustainable marketing strategies.
Right. Well, I'll echo that. I'm going to say that your email has got really great stuff in it. It's definitely worth it for anybody who wants to grab a hold of that. So, Adriana, thank you so much for coming on today. This has just been great.
Thank you too, Brad.
And for you guys who are listening at the end, I just want to remind you that if you'd like to go get the entire archive of the Standout Business Show, just go to standoutbusiness.show and it's all there. You can binge to your heart's content all the audio, all the video, all the links to all the different resources. And we go live every Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And until the next time, so long.